This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Soaring words can inspire us. Sometimes simple ones can shame us. From Robert Kennedy's 1966 speech at the University of Cape Town in South Africa.
It is from numberless diverse acts of courage such as these that human history is thus shaped.
To this inscription on the barracks wall of the immigration station on Angel Island in San Francisco Bay, the day I am rid of this prison and attain success, I must remember that this chapter once existed. In a new book called Etched in Stone, Enduring Words from Our Nation's Monuments, author Ryan Coonerty collects immortal words from 50 monuments and memorials from public buildings, walls, and sidewalks from around the country. He includes the usual suspects, the Gettysburg Address on the Lincoln Memorial, the Emma Lazarus poem on the Statue of Liberty, but Coonerty also includes some less well-known, like those words inscribed on the immigration station where thousands of Chinese immigrants were locked up, and the Tribune Tower in Chicago, whose south wall quotes John chapter 8, verse 32, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." One of the most memorable quotes you've seen etched in stone. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later on in the program, the annotated Pride and Prejudice. But first, Ryan Coonerty joins us from the studios of the University of California at Santa Cruz. Nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And when did you come up with the idea to focus a book on the words carved on our memorials in public buildings?
It was about 4 years ago. I was living in Washington, D.C., and I had gone for a jog down on the National Mall, and I was standing on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, and it was a less than prideful moment as tour buses were pouring people out and kids were screaming and fighting and families were arguing. But then I went inside and I saw people standing there really working through the Gettysburg Address, which is not easy to read either physically because it's all capital letters with very tightly engraved together. Mm-hmm. And then also conceptually it's difficult to read, but people were really working through it. And I saw that these engraved words matter.
Is it one of those etchings also where all the U's look like V's?
Yeah, it is. It's not an easy thing to read. They made it difficult.
Well, once you've decided to do this, and the book is published by National Geographic, you've got a wonderful photographer to go take images of these various memorials and sites that you cite. But how did you decide which to include and which ones to leave out?
I picked ones that that I thought everybody would expect to see there. So you have the Jefferson and the Lincoln Memorial, but then I also tried to. The book's really meant to be an accessible history of America as well, and so I tried to go back and find engraved words that fit with certain periods, whether it's slavery or Japanese internment, and so to include those sites as well because it gives a more complete picture of America.
And as we mentioned in the beginning of this program and during our billboard, there's also the handprints and the footprints and sometimes even hoof prints in front of Grauman's Chinese Theater.
Yeah, I had to include that because every time I told somebody I was working on this project, everybody would ask me, oh, are you going to include the handprints in front of Grauman's Theater? And I hadn't really planned on it, but it had become such a piece of Americana that I thought I should include it.
Well, we'd like to encourage our listeners to call us and tell us what particular words in stone have inspired, amused, or intrigued them over the years. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. We're also monitoring our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Robert from our blog said there's a bronze plaque that hangs by the entrance to Bascom Hall on the University of the Madison, Wisconsin campus that reads, "Whatever may be the limitations which trammel inquiry elsewhere, we believe that the great state University of Wisconsin should ever encourage that continual and fearless sifting and winnowing by which alone the truth can be found." Interestingly, we also got an email from Tim in Lander, Wyoming. "The silliest bit of human arrogance I've seen carved into a structure is above the main entrance of the engineering building at the University of Wyoming in Laramie. It urges us to strive on. The control of nature is won, not given. The entire time I was a student there, I fantasized about surreptitiously covering it with a banner that read, 'Dream on, the control of nature is a fool's errand.' Unfortunately, I never worked up the nerve to do it."
Wow, that's there are many less proud moments of words engraved in stone. There's a great book called Lies Across America that covers some of those words.
Mm-hmm. Let's see if we get a listener on the line, and this is Patty. Patty with us from Berkeley, California.
Hi. I just thought the Franklin Delano Roosevelt Memorial was very pertinent to our current situation. For example, that we shouldn't be the first to enter war or strike another country, and I thought maybe our president should take a walk down there.
Mm-hmm. The Franklin Delano Roosevelt Memorial, one of the more recent ones erected here in Washington, D.C., and I think I read in your book the first to a 20th century president here in Washington, but that gets a lot of coverage in the book.
It does. It's a really wonderful memorial. It was designed to be life size, and so you can walk among the men waiting in line, the bread lines, and interact with the words. Carol Highsmith did some wonderful photography there.
Mm-hmm. That's the photographer who took all the pictures in this book.
Yeah, she's an architectural photographer who's done more than 50 books, and she can really bring these walls and sidewalks alive through the book.
Thanks very much for the call, Patty.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Here's one from Sherry in Oakland, Missouri. One of my favorite monumental inscriptions is on the St. Louis Art Museum, housed in the original Fine Arts Palace of the 1904 World's Fair, designed by Beaux-Arts architect Cass Gilbert. The front says, "Dedicated to art and free for all." The museum has never had an admission fee, she says. And the back says, "Art still has truth. Seek refuge there." You do look at some less obvious places that we said. Art museums, I don't think, came into it.
No, they didn't. And one of the exciting things, I think, about bringing this book out is I'm sure there are dozens of sites that I missed across the country that have really profound words. And so I think I'm looking forward to the opportunity to hear more about these sites because that's a great words etched in stone.
Mm-hmm. And one of my favorites, of course, and it's certainly not just mine, but the words inscribed atop the U.S. Post Office across the street from Pennsylvania Station in New York that says, neither rain nor snow nor gloom of night shall stay these couriers from the swift completion of their appointed rounds.
Yeah, that's a wonderful one, and people forget that it was engraved in stone on the post office, and it hopefully in the next book we can include that one.
Let's see if we can go now to Ian. Is that right?
Ion,
excuse me. I didn't trust the spelling of my screener. I apologize. You're calling us from Elk Grove in California. Go ahead, please.
Yes. At Omaha Beach, where the cemetery is for the Normandy landing in World War II, the cemetery itself is emotional enough to see the little white crosses and stars. Up front, there's a dark metal statue. It's a tall statue of a man, and he's looking up. Around the base of the statue are carved the words, "Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord." And I tell you, that was the icing on my emotional cake at that point.
Wow.
That is
a powerful place.
You restricted yourself, though, in this book to places that were actually in the physical boundaries of the United States.
Yeah, I did. I chose to inscribe. I have been to Omaha Beach, and it is a powerful, very powerful place. It's these public spaces that we're also celebrating. It's not just words, but it's places where the public can stand and get a sense of history or get a sense of the national aspirations.
Hmm. I really got a sense of history with all of our soldiers buried there. Hmm. Yeah.
Thank you very much for the call, Ione, and
you're
welcome. Apologize for messing up your name earlier. Here's one from Ben in Oregon. I have a photo on my office wall with kids kneeling beneath the inscription, "Freedom is not free," at the Korean War Memorial in Washington, D.C. Again, one of our more recent memorials.
Yeah, and that is included in the book. You have dozens of soldiers sort of walking across the landscape of the National Mall for the Korean Memorial, and on the black wall behind it, it says "Freedom is not free."
Here's my favorite building inscription from Faith in Huntertown, Indiana, on the 103-year-old Allen County Courthouse in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Ring out the thousand wars of old, ring in the thousand years of peace. That's a quote from a poem, Ring Out Wild Bells, by Alfred Lord Tennyson. I drive by this building every day going to and from work. I consider myself an optimist, but despair whether there will be world peace in my lifetime.
Wow, that's these words. One of the best things about creating a book like this is to realize just how aspirational so many engraved words are. They set a high bar, which we don't often meet as a country, but at least we have those aspirations set forth for us.
Let's go to Marty. Marty calling us from Boise, Idaho.
Hi. I have actually a couple of favorites that are right next door to each other in Boise. The first is the Anne Frank Human Rights Memorial, which was erected, I think, in part to respond to Idaho's undeserved reputation as being a refuge for not very good people in the northern part. And that has both quotes from Anne Frank, of course, the quote, I believe that people are basically good, and others from her diary. And it also has the entire text of the UN Declaration of Human Rights, which is a bit of a read. It took five or six tablets, but it's definitely worth standing there and looking at. And then the other is just plain fun. Right next door is the Boise Public Library, and the word library in very large letters is followed by an exclamation point.
That's not so bad. Very good. Marty, thanks very much for the call.
Okay, thank you.
And before we go to the break, Ryan Coonerty, words from Anne Frank are certainly included in your book.
Yeah, I included the Anne Frank Memorial in Boise, Idaho. I love the idea of Anne Frank 40 years ago and thousands of miles away in a very different place, trying to imagine that she would have a memorial dedicated to herself in Boise, Idaho, which is a far cry from Amsterdam.
We're talking about some of the most memorable quotes ever etched in stone. Ryan Coonerty will be back with us after the break. We're also going to talk with an architect who helped decide what words to include on the planned Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial and how those decisions were made. You can join the conversation at 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, or email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. We'll be back after the break. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking with Ryan Coonerty this hour about his new book, Etched in Stone, Enduring Words from Our Nation's Monuments. You can take a look at the slideshow of several of the images from his book at our website. That's at npr.org/talk. And as always, we want to hear from you. What are the most memorable quotes you've seen etched in stone? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also suggest some nominees on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. All those inspiring words and uplifting quotations we see on buildings and monuments, well, somebody has to pick them. Our next guest was recently involved in making some tough choices. Ed Jackson is executive architect for the Martin Luther King Jr. National Memorial Project. The memorial will be located here in Washington on the National Mall. Construction is expected to begin later this year. Ed Jackson joins us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for inviting us.
And you have to begin with somebody like Martin Luther King. First of all, you have an embarrassment of riches. He wrote a lot of and said a lot of great things.
That is true, and that made the initial requirement an enormous task to somehow sort through the volume of information and messages that he was trying to impart, not only to America but to the world, mm-hmm. and trying to make concrete, succinct selections that would allow us to put on the memorial, because you couldn't put everything that he has written. So the question becomes, what do you put on the mall?
And you've also got the situation where, of course, there are Martin Luther King, and there are other tributes to Martin Luther King that already have some words etched in stone on them.
That is true. But I think for us, going back to the development of the Program of Requirements back in 1998 and 99, that's where we frame the mission and the goals and objectives of what we wanted to accomplish. And so I had a committee, and the committee decided that we did not want to make this a monument to Dr. King. We wanted to make it a living memorial. And in doing so, what we had to do was to craft a program that the design community would respond to in such a way that whatever the end result was, his message, his vision, would continue to be resonated for generations yet unborn.
There is also a set of conditions that you have to imagine the visitor approaching this, and will they expect to see the I Have a Dream speech, for example?
That's an interesting question. By and large, I think the direct answer to that question is yes. But in the final analysis, we chose not to select the most obvious quotes from Dr. King's legacy. In framing the program of requirements, we came to the conclusion, out of all of the tenets that he spoke of, that there were four that were paramount: love for mankind, justice, hope, and I'm losing them.
Democracy.
Democracy. Thank you. Yes, democracy. And let me give you a sense of the process. One of the first thing we did is we decided to elicit the support and research capability of Dr. Claiborne Carson. If you don't know, if your listeners are not aware, he was the individual at Stanford University was given the right by Mrs. King to collect the entire body of what he had written during his lifespan and collect that into a several-volume set. So we thought that that was a likely source to go to in order to do the research around those four themes. And what he did for us, he provided us with over 40 quotable quotes that our Council of Historians would actually select from.
I wonder, Ryan Coonerty, are you aware of the selection process for this and for other kinds of decisions like this? Is this a typical kind of procedure?
Yeah. Well, in recent memory, if you look at the Oklahoma City Memorial and other memorials, they form committees of usually experts in public architecture and the historical event. And then they go and then also families of the victims or families of people involved. And then they try to craft something that both speaks to the immediate needs of the family and then as well as provides some historical context for future generations to come.
And one difference that you've noted is that in recent days, Oklahoma City is one, the World Trade Center is another, the Pentagon a third, where the memorials erected quite quickly after the events that demand the memorialization, as opposed to, well, for the most part, these words were spoken many, many years before the before they were chosen to be written in stone.
Yeah, you could see it with the Martin Luther King Memorial. It's now 40 years later, and there's a different context and a different purpose to a memorial now than there would have been 40 years ago. But with the Oklahoma City and the 9/11 memorials, you see people trying to create it within a very short period of time, and it creates some difficulty because you're trying to serve many purposes.
And I wonder, Ed Jackson, I think the choices for a Martin Luther King Memorial would have been different 30, 40 years ago.
That is true. I go back to this this basic document that became our driving force. As a committee that we had formed, there were individuals who our friends and who were very knowledgeable of Dr. King and his mission. And along with even we had college students as a part of this effort. And the crux of the matter for us was to try to decide if we're going to make this a living memorial, should it be about the civil rights movement or should it be about the vision in which Dr. King was talking about. And the more we talked about it, the more we listened to his speeches on tape, the more we came to the conclusion that the civil rights movement was simply the pulpit that allowed him to address the ills of this, not only this nation, but the world.
And Ryan Coonerty, I think you came to a similar conclusion, or people who put words on stone about other presidents, that it's not elections won or wars fought or things like that, but ideals and principles that end up in stone.
That's one of the nice things about our monuments to presidents, for example. They tend to not focus on their accomplishments as president. Rather, they include their aspirations for the country that tend to be more timeless. Mm-hmm. Whether it's the Jefferson or Lincoln Memorial, that they tend to focus not on the individual but on overall aspirations. And the Martin Luther King Memorial, both at Morehouse University and soon to be built on the Mall, I think will do that as well.
I have to ask you, Ed Jackson, though, one of your problems, or at least one of your challenges, you've got a limited space.
Yes.
And how big do you make the letters? How much do you put on? Do you crowd it? These are all interesting problems.
Yes, and I think the viewing public, the listening public, is not aware of the anthropometrics that's associated with the design and the placement of the letters, the size of the letters, the font that has to be used that makes it readable. In our particular case, we have a granite wall at the apex of that a crescent-shaped wall. It's 12 foot high, but then it cascades down to nothing larger than 2 feet. And so the body of work that we're going to put on that wall, as we go from the high point to the low point, we're talking about fewer and fewer words. And if you're talking about quotes, and you know how wordy Dr. King was, how do you capture the essence of his message in the fewest number of words that he had to say? That became an enormous challenge to do, but I think we have successfully achieved that.
Mm-hmm. And there's also, do you anticipate that people will move from in one direction past this? I mean, do you have a sort of narrative structure here, or do you attempt to do that?
That was part of the debate. We decided that we were not going to make it chronological, and we were not going to make the themes in such a way that you group all of the themes about love and all of the themes about democracy. No, you make it interchangeable such that whatever point in the memorial experience that the visitor engages the memorial, there is a message to walk away with.
These are fascinating. Were these the big issues of the debate? Obviously, the design of the memorial, I guess, comes first.
Well, knowing as you move through the Mountain of Despair, which is one of the centerpieces of the memorial experience, the Mountain of Despair, which is formed at the portal of the memorial experience, you move through that, and then the first thing you see is the Stone of Hope. But when you turn around, that's when you see all of the words that are on this crescent-shaped wall. The spaces immediately to the left and the right of the Mountain of Despair, that provides the largest quotations that we could have on the mall. So the question becomes, all right, this is the largest space. Mm-hmm. Now, what quotes will we put in the largest space? Because as we move away from that position, the quotes become smaller and smaller and smaller. So we felt that on the right, we will have a statement about our loyalties must become ecumenical rather mm-hmm. than sectional in terms of what Dr. King had to say, and that they must go beyond our loyalties to nation and to tribe and to race, and we must develop a world perspective. And on the left side, his quote about unconditional love in the final day will determine the course of reality. And we felt peace on one side and a world perspective on the other would be an appropriate way to start the experience.
That quote, "I believe that unarmed truth and unconditional love will have the final word in reality. This is why right temporarily defeated is stronger than evil triumphant." Boy, Ryan Coonerty, that's certain to make your next edition.
Absolutely. Dr. King, his words are such a key element of his legacy that you have to include. You have to include those on any sort of memorial.
Mm. Ed Jackson, thanks so much for being with us, and good luck with it.
Thank you very much.
We can't wait to see it. Ed Jackson is the executive architect for the Washington, D.C. Martin Luther King Jr. National Memorial Project, and he joined us here today in Studio 3A. We're getting a ton of emails on the people's favorite words etched in stone, giving Ryan Coonerty ideas for his next book. At the Michael in Boise, Idaho, at the Boise, Idaho Veterans Administration Hospital, there's a stone at the entrance that proclaims, "The price of freedom is visible here. My wife, a family physician, and and I have often schemed about replacing the word freedom with smoking to more accurately reflect the reality seen within the hospital's walls. This is from Jenny. Give light and the people will find their own way. That's on the building that publishes the newspaper, the Stewart News in Stewart, Florida. You do have one quote from a newspaper building in your book.
I do. I do the Tribune Tower, which is actually filled with quotations. My favorite one there is a good newspaper is a nation having a conversation with itself, from Arthur Miller.
Mm-hmm. Here's a quote sent in by Andrea in Oregon, inscribed on the Southwest Stadium Tower, the University of Nebraska Memorial Football Stadium. To this day, it inspires me each time I read it, hear it, or think it. Not the victory, but the action. Not the goal, but the game. In the deed, the glory. That a quote from Hartley Burr Alexander, who's credited as having been a professor at UNL. So I guess have you gone to football stadiums?
I didn't. I actually hadn't thought about going to football stadiums, but maybe that's a whole book in and of itself.
We're speaking with Ryan Coonerty. He's the author and editor of Etched in Stone, Enduring Words from Our Nation's Monuments, which is published by National Geographic, and he's vice president of a bookshop in Santa Cruz. He's speaking with us today from the University of California at Santa Cruz. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get some more listeners on the line. This is Christy. Christy calling us from Cincinnati.
Hi. This is a very interesting topic and one that's quite challenging for the radio.
Yes.
But, I'm a designer and an educator here in Cincinnati and actually on my way to teach a class on typography right now. And I think one of the things that needs to be noted is that there's something that happens when you change text into something that one can stand around and experience in space. And one of the most visceral experiences I've had is when I went to see the Vietnam Memorial for the first time. And I think Maya Lin, in the way that she approached the memorial from the beginning, even down to the understanding that there will be so many people named John Smith, that to name them alphabetically wouldn't do it justice, that it brings home not just the memorial, but through the words, it brings home the tragedy of the deaths and the lives of men that were lost in that war. And I just wanted to include that for consideration. And since I'm late for class, I will take comments off air. Thank
okay,
you.
And good luck with your class, Christy.
Thanks.
Certainly the Vietnam Memorial, a moving experience for anybody who comes to Washington, D.C., and listed in your book.
And it really changed the way memorials were designed. Previously, the war memorial sort of had grandiose quotes about victory or courage. And Maya Lin, by inscribing simply the names on that black granite wall, changed the way memorials have been designed since.
Let's talk with Swede. Swede with us from Roanoke in Virginia. Swede, you there?
Yes.
Go ahead, please. Swede, I think Swede's listening to his radio and not listening to us.
I was just contemplating there. What I was going to say is there's an inscription at the Virginia Military Institute in Lexington, Virginia. By Stonewall Jackson.
Yes, and what does it say?
It's by Stonewall Jackson. And it says, you may be whatever you resolve to be.
And, of course, General Jackson, a graduate of the Virginia Military Institute.
That is true. That is very true.
Okay. Thanks very much for the call, Swede.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. The nation's military academies, I don't think, are in your book.
No, I looked, and we represented the branches of the military through the Marine Corps Memorial, which is the Iwo Jima Memorial.
Mm-hmm.
Uncommon valor was a common virtue. And we did the Navy Memorial down in Washington, D.C., who has the hymn to Sailors Lost at Sea. So we represented the military through those sites.
Let's get one last call in. This Fred. Fred with us from Honolulu.
Oh, hello.
Hi, go ahead, please.
Okay. This comes from a public school in New York City. I think it was built in the late 18th century, and I guess it's a lesson for the students. It says, every waking hour we weave, whether we will or no, every thought and act and deed into the warp must go.
Hmm. I wonder, Ryan Coonerty, that's a great quote. And are schools and are we designing in quotes the way we used to?
You know, I don't know about schools, whether they're building in quotes. I mean, many high schools will have engraved names of their alumni who have been lost in wars. But I don't know that it's good because it quotes like that set a context. The IBM Schoolhouse, which trained IBM executives, they engraved quotations about Think, which became their famous motto, all over the schoolhouse in order to set a context to remind people how to approach their studies at the IBM Schoolhouse.
Fred, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you.
And we'll end. Connie in Boise, Idaho wrote us an email, not necessarily uplifting or inspiring, but I got a kick out of a tombstone in a small town cemetery that read, "I told you I was sick." I guess tombstones are another category entirely, but nevertheless etched in stone.
It is. There are books dedicated to fun tombstones across the country.
Ryan Coonerty, thanks very much for your time. Good luck with the book.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Ryan Coonerty, author of Etched in Stone, Enduring Words from Our Nation's Monuments. When we come back from a break, the annotated Jane Austen. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.